Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey friends, good morning. Welcome to Taking It Outdoors. We got a nice potpourri of topics to address today. I've invited Mark Hertlein back to the studio. You remember Mark, frequent contributor here to the program. He is a fishing instructor locally, regionally across the state. Mark is a tournament angler, and he's kind of hot this year. He's also a pro staffer for Shimano, G. Loomis, Power Pro, Costa, and many other fine brands. Mark just told me before we got started he's currently leading the ABA trail for bass tournaments. Good for you, man. That's huge. That's a big statewide field. Where was your last event?
Thousand Islands.
And let me guess, you weighed in about 27 pounds?
No, I did horrible. I weighed in 12-something. All largemouth, but 15 pounds won it, a smallie.
Goodness, that's it?
Yeah, the week before, 23 pounds won it, and I think it was a 6'8 lunker.
Now, if I haven't fished a tournament this year, but historically speaking, this time of year, aren't tournaments getting their heaviest bags generally this
time
of year?
Yeah, now and into the fall. I really like the fall a lot better than I like it now because it's still so hot out there. They're in summer patterns still.
So where are you now, and what do you have to do to finish the season to be the ABA state champion?
It's Division IV, which is New York State. It's not the Ram Series. It's the one below that. I have a tournament on Oneida and then a tournament on Fairhaven.
All right. You should do
two
good.
Two home waters. Yeah. So, yeah, I have to... I think I have to get a couple more first places just to get the points.
Oh,
it's based
no
on points.
Oh, somebody's close to you. You're human.
Yeah, I'm only
all.
One point in front.
That's all right,
so,
man.
But that's all right.
Hey, man, I'll take my chances. Knowing what I know about your bass fishing game, I would bet on you on Oneida.
Thanks.
That's built for you. It's generally a shallow fishery.
Yeah.
You have a mixed bag opportunity there. You can fish multiple habitat structure. I mean, there's everything for you. So.
And I've got a game plan down already, which I will not share.
Okay.
At this moment.
I'm not going to ask.
I will say Oneida is the place. If I will do good if I can actually count my fish. Because at another ABA tournament there, I had it won. I had like 18, 19 pounds of largemouth, had a huge lunker. Unfortunately, I couldn't count, and I had 6 fish in the live well and had to disqualify myself.
Oh, that's funny. I remember another rock bass tournament where you weighed in 9 fish on a 10-fish tournament.
Huh. I got new tags, though, that have numbers on them, so that should help.
Good for you, man. Mark, this morning's broadcast is made possible thanks to Johnston RV Country. 30 years now of creating generations of family fun in Webster, Palmyra. You can find them online at jrvcountry.com. Also, Bentley Brothers Kubota in Brockport and Albion. Save a horse, ride a Kubota. Did you go down to Watkins Glen, Mark?
No, I didn't. I was fishing. Me and Nash fished a tournament, so I did not go. I did watch the race, though.
Yeah? Did it meet your expectations as the biggest race fan in my life?
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, the fact that Chase Elliott won it, and I like Martin Truex, too. Yeah, it was a great race. I mean, the Glen puts on a fabulous race for NASCAR.
Yeah, people rave about it. Yeah, Chase Elliott went in. All of the older guys in my life who love Bill Elliott were really happy to see that. And leading up to the race, they brought Rusty Wallace in here, and he was on the coffee club. We had him in studio for about 20 minutes. He was so cool.
He's a cool guy.
I've interviewed Garth Brooks, and I was more nervous talking to Rusty Wallace for some reason. It was amazing. No, I'm curious. I didn't know if you go down there and do camping.
I used to go to that race, but it is so packed. I go to the 6-hour endurance race, and the vintage race in September is phenomenal. That's a great, there's all types of cars there. So.
Yeah, I've been down there for, is it the Rolex series where they have the Porsche and the little
That's the 6 hours at the Glen. The Rolex was about 15 years ago.
Well, that was when I first moved here, man. That's
I still have a Rolex sticker on my car, believe it or not.
I was just trying to relate to you, man.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
I don't know why I've never, I like racing. I'm a race fan, but it's NASCAR, IndyCar, and some NHRA. But when you get into the other series, it's hard for me to pay attention to all that. I'm a busy guy, man.
Well, if you're going to go watch races, the best races around here are the dirt races. Go watch the 360 sprint cars, the Outlaws when they come up here. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, and the fans of that kind of motorsports, man, you will not find a more passionate bunch.
Oh, they're diehard.
Than the supporters of that kind of racing. Well, Mark, I got a couple things I want to get to today. First of which, I don't know if you subscribe to New York Outdoor News. This is an older episode. It's been sitting in my bag for a while. And, from time to time, turkey hunting works its way into the conversation here. And overwhelmingly over the last couple of years, the news about turkey hunting has kind of waned. You know, we've had a couple bad seasons. But this year was good, and I saw a positive article here, and I wanted to share it in hopes to, brighten the moods of the turkey hunters, especially with fall turkey season around the corner. I know it's not as popular as spring because of deer hunting, but the gobbler harvest had a huge increase this past year. All right, says here, New York spring gobbler harvest is up about 5% this year. I know 5% may not seem like that big of a number, but 5% of a huge number is still a lot of turkeys. Consider the following. The 2018 turkey kill was 17,492. So a 5% increase puts us up near 18,422 turkeys. So when you compare that to the 5-year average and the 10-year average, it's very promising for our local turkey hunters, especially the old guys who are aware of the good old days, you know.
Is that, you think that there's more birds now? Because I see a lot of birds. Or is it maybe the weather is better last spring? It gives more opportunity to hunt.
I've had the president of the National Wild Turkey Federation in here, and he says it's a combination of the two. The last we've had, maybe not this year, but the two seasons removed and three seasons ago, it was so wet you couldn't get out. So
right.
the numbers were down. But also guys were saying we're not seeing the birds that we're used to seeing. So I saw this and thought it was encouraging and wanted to share it with everyone. I saw something else online, Mark, and we're going to get into this in the next segment. You've done a lot of fishing for multiple species, and you know as well as I do, you fish long enough, you're going to catch a jacked up fish every now and then with like a genetic mutation. You know what I mean? Maybe it has a deformed spine or, you know what I mean? Just freaky stuff you can pull out of the water. I saw a picture online of a salmon somebody caught right up here, right just north of us in Lake Ontario. That is the freakiest thing I've ever seen. I'll show you a picture of it and tell you all about it. We'll begin there next, right here. This is Taking It Outdoors on 92.5 WBEE. All right, folks, good morning. Welcome back to Taking It Outdoors. We're having a nice conversation today about a potpourri of outdoor subjects. Our guest in studio is Mark Hertline. You may remember Mark as a frequent contributor to the program. He's a fishing instructor around town, across the region, and across the state. He's a tournament angler and a pro staffer for great brands like Shimano, G. Loomis, Power Pro, Costa Del Mar, Sunglasses, and many other fine brands. This broadcast is made possible each and every week by Johnston RV Country, where they are celebrating 30 years of creating generations of family fun in Webster, Palmyra, and online at jrvcountry.com. Also, Bentley Brothers Kubota in Brockport and Albion. Save a horse, ride a Kubota. Mark, have you checked the date on your fishing license?
Yes.
All right, good. I want to remind everyone, check the date on your fishing license. I did mine, and it's going to expire soon. Since they stopped doing the sportsman license, I get my fishing license the day I get my deer tags.
Yeah, that's what I do, I think.
So I'm coming up on 1 year is what I'm saying. And I did. I'm like a less than a week out from expiring. So I wanted to remind everyone to not be complacent. Check the dates on your fishing and licenses, because if you bought them in advance of deer season last year, they will expire soon. That's a good tip, isn't it, Mark?
That's a very good tip, and I'm good till December.
Oh, you didn't get deer? You got deer tags late last year?
Yes.
Oh, man. That's Mark. He comes in after the rut and still gets a bigger deer than everybody. All right, Mark, I saw something pretty freaky online. I mentioned in the last break, you know, you fish long enough, you're going to pull some freaky fish out of the water. You know, cool-looking fish, mutated fish, injured fish, deformed fish, ill fish, you know. You'll see it all if you fish long enough. But somebody posted on Lake Ontario United, if you're a local angler, chances are you're familiar with this site. It's a nice forum for outdoorsmen in our area. So I'm on that site looking at the fishing report, seeing what's up, because I'm hearing, you know, about how great the salmon fishing's been. And I see this post from a guy. He's like, hey, anybody ever seen anything like this? And I just showed Mark this picture. A guy caught, local guy, right here, Lake Ontario, caught a king salmon that had two mouths. And I know what you're saying. What are you talking about? They weren't side by side. It had a salmon mouth, like a regular salmon mouth. And then on, below the bottom jaw, there was another bottom jaw instead of gill plates. If I would have described that to you the way I just did, would you have got a good picture of it in your mind's eye?
It's one regular jaw, and then the other jaw just underneath it.
It's mutated looking?
It's a little smaller.
Yeah.
But, and my question to you is, you know, we don't like to talk in between the breaks, is what mouth hit the lure, and can it feed out of the other mouth?
People in the comments of the picture asked that same question. I didn't see where it was answered. There was one picture, because the guy posted, and I'll link to it on the B Facebook page. I'll also put it on the Taking It Outdoors portion of WBEE.com. I'm guessing the top mouth, only because I saw the lure. They took a picture of it laying on the floor, and right, it seemed to be more forwardly positioned. So my guess is the top mouth, but I don't know. The bottom mouth, I don't know if it was functioning. The guy did a great job of taking pictures. He put it back in.
Oh, he didn't keep it?
No. And I don't, like, man, that freaky, what would I do? Would I keep that fish?
It had teeth, right?
Yeah.
You said it had teeth? Yeah.
Yeah, on the bottom. I mean, they were mutated and all. Well, you can see very clearly on the pictures, but it was a freaky fish, man. And I don't know if it worked. It's weird, man. It's, I don't know. At some angles, it looked like somebody gave it a tracheotomy or something, but it's a weird two-mouthed king salmon.
Yeah, it was.
Right out of the, you know, and I don't know if it's a weird genetic mutation. Maybe that thing
it was going to be a Siamese fish.
You never know, man.
Siamese twin, you know.
A lot of people, they're not well played. And the Ganay jokes have already started to fly around it. This fish was either in the Genesee River or got nuked out at Ganay. But anyway, freaky, freaky fish, man. And I've caught some weirdos, man. I've caught fishes, nice grammar. I've caught fish, like a bass, that had a serpentine spine on it.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've caught a pike like that. It almost had like a 90-degree bend in it, like spinal bifida or something.
I've caught too many bass with muskie or northern or tiger muskie marks on it, where you can clearly see a predator fish has come trying to kill that thing, and it survived. There for a while, it's not so much. I don't see it so much anymore, but a couple years ago, man, I was catching a lot of bass that had this weird herpes-looking stuff on the lips. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't. No idea.
All right. Well, it was a deal, man. And I even had a fish biologist look at it.
Yeah.
And he told me what it was. I forget. It's something that's wildly common. And, it's weird. It's like a weird fish herpes. It's not herpes. It just looks like
Well,
it,
I wouldn't
I mean?
Think so. You I caught a rock bass. I don't know if you can. It's got a hole right up behind its gill plate, and it's clear through there. And we had one guess that we pretty much know what did it.
I would say a crankbait ripped through it.
No, I think a blue heron took a stab at it.
Oh.
I mean, that's a perfect hole through there, and it's not small. It's over a quarter inch wide.
Oh, I didn't get the precise perspective.
Yeah.
Because
that's a huge rock bass, of course.
Now that you, of course, you only catch big fish. Yeah. They only, I've seen that before.
Have you?
Yeah. It could be a blue heron.
That's the only thing I could think of that could spear a perfect hole like that through it.
Yeah, it looks like, I know not everybody can see Mark's phone, but it looks just like you took a drill.
Yep.
And it's that clean of a hole.
But it was still living, you know, obviously, and feeding.
Yeah, I don't know. That's weird, man.
You know, I've been seeing a lot lately, and I mentioned to somebody up at the islands, I've been seeing a couple dead eels floating around. And I hardly ever see eels.
Around here or when you're
I saw some out when I was running out to Oswego to fish out in the lake. And then I saw some up at the Thousand Islands.
Huh. Yeah, those are freaky, man. I don't like them, so.
Yeah, they're gross.
That's okay. Thank goodness I've never caught one. I've been on the boat when somebody's hooked up with one. Accidentally, we're not out there eel fishing, for Pete's sake.
I've caught one, and these guys next to me asked me if they could have it, and they had a campfire going. We were bullhead fishing. They cooked it right there and ate it.
Hey, man.
Yeah, not me.
No, not when I can get to Wegmans or Tops.
Yeah.
I mean, for survival, you know, if it's apocalyptic times, I'll eat an eel, but I go and get a nice piece of tilapia from from the market. A couple other things, man, I wanted to get to today, Mark. One of these happened down by you. And, you know, if you have a boat or, you know, anyone in your family has a boat, especially one you trailer around a lot, if you do it long enough, you're going to have some trouble. You know, whether it's a flat tire, you know what I mean? You're going to have some sort of trailer breakdown. It's inevitable. A lot of things you can't control. A lot of them you can control, like, you know, strapping your boat to the trailer is a big thing. A couple weeks ago, there was a picture circulated really, really widely of a local accident. And it was a picture of a truck, like a big Dodge truck, underneath like an old Grady Widers or a big
cabin cruiser.
Yeah, a big boat. I don't know what
it looked about 25 foot, 24 maybe.
Yeah, huge boat. And it's out by you, 104
yeah,
East.
Yeah, right on 104 in Lincoln Road it happened.
And when I saw the pictures, I was out of town, so I just saw it on social media. So I was on 104, and I was like, oh my God, that guy rear-ended a boat. Well, I found out between then and now that that guy did not rear-end a boat. The light turned red, and he went to stop. And he stopped, you know, too fast, and that boat
didn't stop
because it wasn't secured to the straight trailer, or it was secured and the security measures failed. I don't know. I was not there.
My guess is he didn't have the straps on in the back to hold it down, and then there might have been a malfunction up front where you crank it onto the boat.
Yep,
and that. The wheel, we call it the wheel, that you butt it up against, that maybe the clip that you clip onto the, you know, broke off or something, and it went right up over the top.
But even if you had it back strapped, that kind of momentum with that big a boat, rip those right out.
Yeah.
You know, those are more for bumps in the road. But this is crazy. Yeah, the thing literally drove up over. And like left a prop mark down the center of the bed and the top of the cab of the truck. Thank goodness nobody was seriously injured. First responders treated a handful of people at the scene, but everybody was okay. Yeah, man, it's freaky things will happen, man. I saw this guy one time, Mark. He was pulling in this wooden boat that he had restored. It was a thing of beauty. You know, when you see them out on the water, they're eye magnets, right? Just an old classic vintage beautiful wooden boat. And I'm trailering up. It was back when I had my aluminum, so I had a lot of boat envy then. And I'm like, oh my God, that's a beautiful boat. And this guy tells me this beautiful story about how it was his grandfather's, and he got it up and running, and this was the first time he's putting it in the water since he rebuilt his dead grandfather's boat. And the guy gets up, cranks it up, and it sounds beautiful, dude, like an old muscle car. It's just rumbling, right? And so I'm talking to the guy, and I'm saying, hey, I'll untie your ropes. Untie him, throw his ropes back on. The guy goes to put it in reverse, hits the gas, and the damn thing shoots forward.
Oof.
I don't know what he did. He crossed something in the gears, yeah. Man. He had forward and reverse mixed up on his shifter, and he ran that thing up into this pontoon boat that was moored up in front of it. And, oh, my God, I cried, and it wasn't even my boat. This guy had me with this story. And just, you know, little things like that, man, can be an expensive mistake. So anytime that we can, remind ourselves to be mindful of these things, it's always advantageous. There was another bad boat accident on Ring of Fire night out at Canisius Lake.
Well, I did not hear about that.
Yeah, somebody was, they were anchored and lights on, and there was a boat moving, and I don't know if they didn't see him, saw him too late, took evasive action, and clipped the anchored boat, the moving boat did, and that boat didn't stop. It kept going. So knocked one guy out of the boat. He gets back in, checks on his passenger, calls the sheriff. The boat that hit and drove off, come to find out, was on, called the sheriff when that happened, but it wouldn't go. He was trying to get to shore. 12 people on the boat, Mark.
Oof.
12 people. They had PFDs for everyone, some kids on the boat, and he... As I don't know, somebody towed him to the launch or whatever, but it put like a 24, 21-inch diameter hole in this boat. And that's at night, man. I don't know, man.
I'm got to be careful.
Scared of that boating at night. That's when people are like, hey, man, you ever go fishing at night? From the dock, maybe. Get out there with some crazies, man. Not that it's crazies, but, you know, usually when something bad happens on the water, it's either oversight, you know, being a bonehead,
yep.
Or complacency, whether it's caused by booze or whatever the case may be, or dangerous conditions, and night has to be treated as such.
How many people do we have run into those huge piers at Sodus Bay? We had one guy that hit it, and he's also the one who hit one of the piers in Rochester. Yeah. 2 years later, he hits the Sodus Pier.
Yeah, I don't know. So I'm not trying to preach. I'm just trying to remind myself included in this, yep. Remind all of us to be mindful.
A little tip, too, is I had a friend who smoked, threw a cigarette out the window, went into his boat, and kaboom. We were picking out lures were melted into the side of the boat.
What did it just hit, landed next to the
can?
Well,
he had an older wooden boat, and it landed next to the can. And some boats, you have portable gas cans you put in there, and that's what happened. And it burnt the boat down to the ground. Because he flicked his cigarette out.
Back in the day, they all had those cans.
Yeah. So don't flick your cigarettes out of your car.
All right, Mark, we're actually going to talk some fishing. How about
that
today?
All right, let's go.
We'll start that in the next segment right here, Taking It Outdoors on 92.5 WBEE. Hey, friends, good morning. Welcome back to Taking It Outdoors. We're having some fun today. We got our friend Mark Hertline in studio talking about a nice mix of outdoor-related subject matter today. Mark, you may remember him from previous appearances. Mark's a frequent contributor. He's a pro staffer for some cool brands like Shimano, G. Loomis, Power Pro, Costa Del Mar sunglasses. But more importantly, Mark's a fishing instructor. He teaches classes, seminars locally in the schools and beyond, regionally across the state, and he's proven to be a valuable resource for us here at Taking It Outdoors. So, Mark, thank you for your time once again. For coming back into the studio with us today. This program made possible thanks to Johnston RV Country, 30 years of creating generations of family fun in Webster, Palmyra, and online at jrvcountry.com. Bentley Brothers Kubota in Brockport and Albion, save a horse, ride a Kubota. This program not possible without those two sponsors. So if you're on the market for an RV or a tractor, give Johnston and Bentley Brothers an opportunity to fulfill that need for you. Mark, this time of year, man, it's go time. A lot of big bags are weighed in tournaments. Fish have, you know, they've restored themselves from the post-spawn. A lot of them have congregated out deep. Some of them are hanging out in the shallows. It's a good time of year to catch a lot of numbers and size fish, right?
Yes.
So what's my problem?
It's not, you know what? It's funny because Lake Ontario smallies have not set up yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not me.
No. In some spots they have, and I'm saying Lake Ontario in front of Wayne County.
Okay.
We had a tournament last weekend and largemouths won it. The smallies were there, but they were only 15 pounds. You know, that's nothing for smallies.
And it's usually the other way around.
Yeah,
if you fish for largemouth in a tournament on Lake Ontario,
yeah,
third place.
Yeah, but the you know, we've been out and I've been catching a ton of fish, but I haven't been getting the big slobs lately either.
Huh.
So it's been, you know, the weeds to me just, they don't look right this year. They're slimy. There's a lot of that grass coming in, the long, thin grass.
Yeah, that eel grass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind that so much, but once it starts to turn slimy, look, I know, it's just a pain in the butt to fish in. And to be honest, well, you know I love to fish on Honey Oy. It's close to the house. I can get there 15 minutes, you know, counting, putting the boat in and out of the water. But that lake got nasty early this year. And I'll tell you, I haven't even been there in 3 or 4 weeks. Hmm. It was so bad. So it could have cleared up, but with all this hot weather, and now we got all this rain recently, that's gonna monkey up the lakes again. So how do you adjust to that?
Well, you know, I was just at the Thousand Islands fishing a tournament up there all week. So what do I do on the way home? I get mad because I took fifth, so I go practice at Port Bay. And that water was horrible. So I talked to somebody that I know that lives there, and I said it's been slow. So when I got there, the water had algae. It was slimy and all that. I moved out of the weeds. I wasn't going to get anything in the weeds. Some of them looked like they were dying. So I went out to the deeper water and fished. And for me to say I'm out in 12 feet of water fishing, that's deep. So I was running chartreuse crankbaits, my jackals, all along the weed edges. And I would get the fish. And I got some good ones. You know, I got some up there in the 3.5s, close to 4. Not many. And then I'd try something else, and it wouldn't work. And then I'd go back to the crankbait, and I'd just start getting them again. So I positioned myself in deeper water and went all along the edges. And the weeds there are so defined. I mean, I'm not even looking at my graph. I'm just looking at them. And I seem to always pick up fish doing that. And the only other thing I've been getting them on consistently is a chatterbait.
No kidding, with a bladed jig.
Yep.
How do you fish that thing? You know, I got 4 or 5 of them in my boat, and I've never tied one on. How do you fish the bladed jig? I see the pros using them like crazy. They're some fish-catching machines.
Yeah, and I move the thing along pretty good. I put a contact swim bait on it, a thrasher it's called. I've been
like
using
a minnow body or more of a craw body?
More of a minnow body.
Okay.
I've been throwing it out at Sodus the other day. I was throwing them out on the drops where I'd see where the water would come up, and not so much on the weed line, but on the where the rocks were, and then the water would go deep there, and I'd throw them along the edges.
All right. I know where to, you know, a good idea to where to throw them. That's some great advice. But relate it to something I know how to use. Is it like, am I using it like a spinner bait?
Yes.
A swim jig?
Actually, it's more like a lipless crankbait. I mean, because you got that vibration going back and forth.
So you can,
it'll sink if you stop it.
You can yo-yo it.
Yes.
Jig it.
But I stop it, pause it. I don't stop it so much because you want that blade to keep moving, and you'll feel it vibrating. I'm running it on 12 on one rod pound test and 15 on the other. Floral, and sometimes I'm running it over the weeds on the top. At the islands, I was throwing it up on the rock and bringing it off the rocks where they drop off, and the largemouth would come out and smack it.
Yeah, man, I've always wanted to get the hang of those. I just, you know, I've never really dedicated the time to learning how to fish them. But, you know, we talked about it before. I'm a huge fan of that TV show, Major League Fishing.
Right.
That's the best TV show for a guy like me. I love it, you know. And a lot of those guys use that bladed jig like crazy. And I'm like, man, I wish I could. Because I've tried to use it where I've worked with like a swim bait. You know, I'm getting it hung up in weeds on Canisius, ripping it free. One time I think I got a bite, but I'm not quite certain. So I stopped fishing them. And I want to ask you, too, I know you're a big frog fisherman. A lot of guys I noticed, too, are going back to the old way of frogging with the soft plastic frog. You'll see a lot of this. A lot of guys will fish them weedless, you know, an old horny toad or something.
Yeah.
A lot of guys, too, and I don't know if you've seen this rig. If you do, tell me how to make it or buy it somewhere. But it's like a buzzbait. But it's a soft plastic frog.
The Strike King Raging Frog, I think it is. They have the feet that paddle, and it's the frog body. You put it on just like you Texas worm up. You know, Texas rig a worm, and that.
But the weight comes from props behind it.
They're not props. It's the way that the feet are made that it bubbles in the water.
Like the back end of a Whopper Plopper.
Similar,
but
yes.
Smaller, yeah.
But it looks like a back end of a swim bait.
Okay,
they catch fish. I've seen fish come blasting out for them.
Yeah, I don't know what the difference is. You know, like with a traditional buzz bait, the disturbance in the water, the hey look at me
right.
portion of the bait, that's forward of the bait. I guess it doesn't matter. It's a reaction strike. They see and hear it. They look. They attack.
Yeah, the difference between a frog, like a pad crasher by Booyah or the scum frogs. Is the Strike King has to keep moving all the time.
Yeah.
I can't throw into a hole that's 2 feet with it and make it bubble, and then it'll get out of the strike zone so fast. So I like the other, you know, the frogs from Booyah or Scum Frog and that, where I don't have to move it. It can sit there and I can twitch it.
Yeah.
And that can drive them nuts.
You can pause it in those negative spaces in between the... In the holes and all. Yeah, that's a good tip, man. Yeah, that's awesome. You figuring out that bladed jig. I've always been envious.
Yeah, it's been working great. My crankbaits have been working fantastic.
And I don't know, you said you put it on 12-pound mono, medium action rod. I mean, ideally.
Yeah, I've got it on a Zodius rod, Shimano. It's a 7.2. It's a medium heavy. So the tip is light, but it's got a good backbone. I want it to give a little bit. And when I'm reeling it in, I'm not holding it straight. I'm holding it down to my side like I do a crankbait. Because when that fish comes up on it, I'm reeling it to the side, and I want the rod to load up on it.
That's your hook set, the
rod. Yeah, well, I do blast the hook in them once I feel them hit. And it is like a crankbait in a little ways because you can feel them knocking it.
Yeah. Isn't that the best feeling when you feel that hit tick and you just turn that rod and it doesn't move? Oh, it just bows up. Ah, that's the best feeling. That's what it's all about. We got one more segment to go right here at Taking It Outdoors. We got a little more fishing conversation for everyone today, and that happens next right here at 92.5 WBEE. Hey, friends, good morning. Welcome back to Taking It Outdoors. Having a nice conversation today about a variety of outdoor subjects. Our guest in studio today is Mark Hertline. Mark is a return visitor here to Taking It Outdoors, frequent contributor. Mark's a heck of a guy. He's a fishing instructor, a tournament angler, and a pro staffer for Shimano, G. Loomis, Power Pro, Costa Del Mar sunglasses, and many more great brands. Mark does good work here in our community, teaching kids to fish in several different programs across the school districts, here, urban and suburban districts. So, Mark, we always like to tip our cap to you for your involvement with the kids, man. Teaching the kids to fish, that's rewarding on so many levels for so many people. Really is. You know, you were talking about, or we kind of touched on, bass fishing not being down, but off a little bit, or just different, I think would be a better way to describe this year's bass season. What's contributing to that, I don't know. But the Finger Lakes, I'm telling you, are kicking my butt.
Yeah,
they've been really hard for me, except the clear ones. Skinny Atlas, I've been to. My God, Mark, I was at Skinny Atlas three Fridays ago. Doesn't matter. Windy day out of the south. Brutal wind. Like, I didn't even check the weather when I went. Had no business going. Oh, my God, Mark. I get out there, and I'm catching smallmouth right and left. 25 up to 42 feet of water. Just a windy day, had them things turned on. I'm good there in that gin clear water. I've been to Keuka two or three times. Had good luck there, largemouth and smallmouth. But Canisius, my home lake, is humbling me.
Well, one thing that it might be, and you answered your own question just in that little spiel.
Where?
You don't have problems in the clear, crystal clear water lakes, but you do in the, quote, muddier lakes.
Yeah, grassier too.
Yeah, what's the difference?
Visibility.
What else? What's the big one? Clear Lakes.
My pattern, my color selection.
How deep were you when you were getting fish in Skinny Atlas?
Really deep.
There you go.
Like beyond, but okay.
I think the water temperature in Canisius and Honeyoy is so warm. I mean, how many days have we had in the 90s? Yeah. We usually get, what, 3 a year, and we've had already, what, 20-something?
Yeah, so. That's good advice, man, but I lived on that lake 5 years, Mark. I've fished Canisius 100 to 150 times a year, and I've had the same time at this point, like annual experience. Like, I know I can go run a deep diving crankbait here, throw a jig down here, drop shot this hole, and I'm not finding them deep. I'm finding way more fish in that shoreline to 8 feet range than I am from that 15 to 25 where I normally do.
Hmm.
So it's, I don't know, man, but you're right about that temperature. That thing has been baking. And then it seems like when it turns over, it all happens at once.
Yeah.
You know, like the week before this rain that we're in a stretch of now, it was so windy. It's like the temperature of Lake Ontario was like a 30-degree swing one day.
Yeah, and the smallies came in and everybody was killing them, and now they're gone.
Yeah. So it's weird. It's a different season. You talk to the salmon charter guys, the big lake captains, and they're like, we haven't even tried to catch a lake trout this year.
Yeah.
Because the king salmon fishing has been legendary. You got guys out there.
Oh, yeah. They're in 100 foot of water, and they should be out in 300 foot of water.
You got guys catching, you know, quads. You got four guys with rods bent over at the same time. It's just, it's been great this year for, you know, amateurs, weekend warriors, charter captains, guys that go on charters. It's been wonderful. The king fishing all summer.
The killer is, though, you go to Canisius and you don't do anything there, and you go in and somebody else just hammered all the big ones.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody's always getting them.
Yeah, that is true. You know, every tournament, somebody does have to win it.
Have you thought maybe that you reached your peak and you're just on your downslide this year?
We're about out of time this week. You know, it could be, Mark. You know, maybe that's it. I don't fish 5 days a week anymore. You know, when I didn't have a girlfriend or a dog or a life or anything, I could go hide from everybody on the front of my boat.
Yeah, but you can always bring the dog out with you.
Yeah, but she scratches my
gel coat.
Old boat that was paid off, it was fine. but in this boat, I'm still making payments on.
Yeah.
I don't take the dog out on it too much. But maybe you're right. I'm out of practice, but I haven't stayed on the fish.
Yeah, and that's tough to do. I mean, I go fish against the guys in Sodus, and I don't practice. I just show up.
Yeah.
And it's like, I haven't been fishing Sodus that much.
But you have 20, 30 years of Sodus experience.
But on the other, you know, we went up to the islands. I practiced my smallmouth spots. I'm like, great, they're here. I know what I'm getting them on. You know, it's going to take a little time, but I'm getting them, and they're good size.
You know,
that was on Thursday. On Saturday, I couldn't catch one.
Yeah, crazy year, man. It's been different. I'm not going to say it's been bad, because it certainly hasn't. It's just been different and a little more challenging, which I guess, you know, can be a good thing. But I'm telling you, we're normally now, my confidence this time of year is out deep. I'm fishing like shallower than you would. I would fish with you, man, like near docks. In the dock range. Yeah, but that's some good advice, man. It's very humbling, you know. And you talk about how good the king salmon fishing is. Have you looked on the LOC Derby leaderboard?
No, I haven't seen it in a couple weeks.
Like a 12, 14-pound lake trout's winning.
Oh, really?
Same with the New York State Summer Classic. Because the king salmon fishing has been so fantastic, nobody's even wasting their time going
after
they're
Lakers.
A Laker. Because, you know, normally a 30-plus will win the
Yeah,
lock.
I think the record's 39.
I mean, huge.
Yeah.
It's world-class lake trout fishing. Nobody's wasting their time on them. The king salmon fishing has been so good. Well, Mark, I want to thank you for coming in today. It's always cool sharing a conversation with you, whether it's about fishing or any other sort of outdoor topic we get work our way into. You're a versatile conversation.
I'll talk about anything. If anybody wants to send me a message or note, you can go on Mark Hertline Fishing on Facebook.
Mark, you got a pro fishing page, huh?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a pro fishing page, but I put stuff up there.
All right. ever you want to tell people how to spell Hurt Line so they don't end up on one of your imposters pages?
It's MarkHertLein.
All right, find him on Facebook, and then you're going to see, you're going to hear him talk on the radio, and then you're going to see the pictures that he posts, and you're going to just be scratching your head. I've been doing that for 10-plus years. I've known the guy. Mark, thanks for your time today. I'll be back in the morning with TJ Sharp and Steve Hausman and the B Morning Coffee Club. You have yourselves a blessed day. The countdown is next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.